This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. So much of the news is centered around the logistics of sending kids back to school this fall. But how do you actually talk to kids themselves about what's going on? Kids tend to see everything in Technicolor, right? Some may be profoundly frightened to hear us talking about COVID-19. Some of them are dealing with grief within their own families. And at minimum, there are children out there who may be confused of what's expected of them in these days when our circumstances seem to change so quickly. Allison Miller is a developmental psychologist and associate professor with the School of Public Health at the University of Michigan. She studies risk and resiliency in children and families. Allison, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Children tend to be, to say the least, more perceptive than a lot of us give them credit for. What have you been noticing kids that you interact with being aware of right now?
Well, I think the kids are reacting to our own uncertainty a lot of the time and trying to figure out this sort of new, what appears to be normal. And so I have noticed, you know, kids talking more about fears or worries about getting sick, as well as why they need to adapt social distancing behaviors and how frustrated they are about doing those behaviors.
You know, most adults, for that matter, are dealing with a lot of anxiety right now over the possibility of infection or the loss of relatives or just distance from friends and just everything that we associate with daily life. I guess it's understandable that our communications with kids might become infected by these anxieties. Do you think that most of us are as aware as we could be of how we're talking to kids?
Certainly with regard to little kids. I mean, I think as the concerns regarding school starting up or not starting up have risen to the top of many parents' agendas, we're all talking about that more. And it's always important to just be aware of what kids are hearing. And if you're thinking that you're having a conversation on the phone or Zoom with someone and children are not listening, that's probably not the case. They're probably picking up on more than you think they are. I think that in terms of preparing kids for this kind of uncertain next few months that we're all going into, it's important to kind of make sure that you can listen to their fears or worries or frustrations. You know, just sort of take them in and let the kids talk about them because they have a lot to process and they're probably, some kids, very disappointed if, for example, their school is going remote and they won't be able to go see the friends that they've been hoping they might be able to see come September.
I mean, it seems like this is a really unique kind of challenge in that, you know, no parent can say, our family isn't going to get sick. That's just not something that parents are able to guarantee right now. But at the same time, you don't want kids to be living with this sense of fear.
Absolutely. I think that's a really important point. We can't necessarily say that you won't get sick or that mommy or daddy won't get sick or that grandma won't get sick. And although it's important not to sort of amp up fear and worry, it's also important not to sort of make false promises. And that's really tempting to do all the time as a parent because you want things to be made better. You want things to just go away. And I think we've all learned that's really not happening here. I think another thing to think about with kids and emphasizing, especially as they're maybe going back to school in whatever format that happens and interacting with new kids that they are, you know, kids they haven't seen in a while, is that people have had very different experiences with this virus, and some people may have been very personally impacted, whereas others not so much. And I think that's going to be a hard thing for teachers and kids to manage as they go forward. Some people may really have experienced trauma and loss, and others may not have or may even think, you know, it's not such a big deal. And so I think that that's very important to be aware that people are coming, kind of reuniting in a school context in particular with very different lived experiences over the past few months.
As much as kids joke with each other about how great it is that they haven't had to be in school, and there may be a sense of euphoria about being back together, at least online, I do wonder if there are some kids who may be feeling some anxiety about school itself and the academic things that are going to be expected of them in this year. Do you have any ideas about talking to kids about that?
I think it's certainly been the case for some kids that not being in school has been even a relief. So I think about kids who might have been bullied in person in school, and they've been at home and been able to do other things, and it's been better for them in some ways. I think the concerns about going back and, for example, not understanding, you know, how to engage in class or how things might be going academically could be a really hard thing. And making sure that kids know they could ask teachers for help. I think socially for kids, as they go back and as they anticipate seeing, you know, friends or acquaintances on the screen and trying to meet new kids, obviously it's very different and, again, not ideal to try to establish relationships over a screen. But I think that kind of reminding kids that everybody's new to this and, you know, to try to engage as best they can will be important.
I did wonder about that. I mean, there are plenty of teachers out there who feel like they're building the car as they drive it. Do you ever feel like you're having that same experience in terms of figuring out how kids work in their online social interactions?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think on a few different fronts. I think number one, those of us adults who've spent many of their hours now on Zoom understand that Zoom fatigue is real, that social interactions and social cues become a lot harder to pick up on Zoom or online platforms. And so it might be a good idea, if parents can kind of have the bandwidth to do this, to kind of make that very concrete to their kids and say, you know, sometimes it's hard to figure out how people are feeling when you just see them on Zoom, or, you know, figure out what people are meaning. And then I think also what happens, you know, from preschool to high school is a lot of emotional socialization, figuring out how to be emotionally with other people, as well as kind of regulate your own emotions. Mm-hmm. And so I think we've all had a lot of stress that we've been dealing with across the past few months, and kids have had a lot of heavy lifting to do in that area. And so when they come back and there's a classroom full of kids and everybody's coming from a different place, everybody might have a little more emotion regulation to do and to understand how you kind of interact with people in this sort of odd new social space. It might take some new skill development.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Allison Miller. She's a developmental psychologist and associate professor with the University of Michigan School of Public Health. We've been discussing how to talk to kids as they get ready for a school year marked by uncertainty amid the COVID-19 pandemic. You know, I had a question for you about a very specific kind of social interactions. Kids, in their way, do talk about politics, and they talk about what's going on in the world amongst each other. And there may be kids whose friends' parents may have different views on things like use of masks or physical distancing. I wonder how parents and kids can navigate, you know, some sense of different ideas about the pandemic without, you know, in the same way that grown-ups are trying to reassess their relationships on Facebook and figure out where the lines of friendship lie and, you know, when it really is most necessary to state your own views and maybe when it's possible to let others have their own opinions.
Yeah, that's a hard one. I mean, certainly, as you mentioned, adults are also trying to figure this out. And so one of the things that we need to be attentive to is how we model behaviors for children, because that's one of the most powerful ways that they learn. I think that in terms of understanding, you know, how families negotiate these restrictions differently, that's important for families to talk about and make sure that their children sort of understand the reasoning behind why wearing masks is a good idea. And so even for preschool age children, you can encourage mask use by saying, if you cover, if you wear your mask and cover your face, then you don't breathe on other people. And then if they wear their mask and cover their face, they don't breathe on you. That's a pretty simple idea that can be transmitted to kids. I think that the idea of wearing masks in public places is, again, kind of an easy thing to explain to a kid by saying, well, when we're out and around more people who we haven't been around, we should use our masks to protect ourselves and to protect other people. And that sometimes rules at home can be different from rules at school, for example, or rules in the store. So kids can get used to the different kind of contexts in which rules apply.
You know, there's just so much that this generation is dealing with in terms of changes to things that they've taken for granted, maybe much of their life. Our most basic unit of education, the classroom, is taking some very different forms this year. And some people, some kids may be returning to in-person learning, and some may still be learning online for part or possibly even all of the year. Are there ways to make the learning process more personal as kids are meeting their new teachers and their friends online? You mentioned, some things to think about in terms of COVID experiences, but just in terms of how kids think about the importance of the classroom and just where they fit in.
I guess one message to kids would be that as they enter their new classroom in the fall, be it online, in person, or some combination, and with a potential transition in the middle of the next few months, to know that they're a really important part of the classroom and that they're sort of forming a new identity as a class together. And I think that's an important thing to do really across all age groups. It's sort of like instilling a sense of identity as part of that class. As an instructor myself, I've been thinking about that a lot in terms of how to build classroom community. And one way to do that is to, share some personal, facts or preferences or stories can help kind of connect kids so they're not just sitting down and saying, here we go, let's do math after 5 months.
Do you know anybody who's packing up either with people in their neighborhood or other members of family like cousins and forming a learning pod?
Yeah, that's been certainly a lot of discussion recently. So that is sort of a nice way to connect kids together. Learning pods can, I think, take lots of different forms, and certainly not everybody has the kind of bandwidth or capacity to put together some sort of formal learning pod. Some people are doing things like hiring a teacher or a teen to come to their house or some designated area to actually do more like formal instruction like that. And I would say that's sort of like a more extreme learning pod. But I think the idea of trying to connect a smaller group of kids, like a subgroup of a class, even if it's still online, or if it's offline but through sharing an activity that they're doing outside of class. Or for example, if kids are reading, maybe they all read the same book together and just sort of Google chat with each other, like not on video necessarily, but email each other about the book. I think that could be really powerful in terms of reconnecting kids to the learning process. I think another idea is if the families had the bandwidth, it would be nice to do some other activities that are not necessarily academically oriented, but things like volunteering or cleaning up outside while we can still get outside. And maybe that could be done in a group, in like a family group or a child group of children, because I think it's important, and this has certainly been in the news, but to remember that the kids who sort of are most urgently in need of the academic and social and social services and connections that school brings are possibly less likely to be able to engage in a learning pod if their parents are essential workers or can't be home or can't spare the extra time and expense that it would take to set up a learning pod. And so we have to be really attentive to educational disparities and inequities that will increase potentially.
Allison, there are any number of situations that are going to stay with us from our time being more distant from each other. And I do kind of feel like everyone's going to be in a different social space, at least in their heads, for the foreseeable future. What concerns do you have about the habits kids are forming right now, or just the long-term impact of being a little bit more remote, maybe a little bit more having to be more self-reliant, even if they're not actually in danger in their homes? You know, just there's a lot more stuff going on independently right now.
You know, there is some danger for sure of kids who are young and unsupervised. And, you know, schools play such an important role for so many kids in terms of providing services as well as providing, you know, just double checks on how that child is doing and how the family is doing. And so all of that is either lost or much, much more difficult through online school. You know, for older kids, school age kids, there's sort of an exciting element of fostering independence that can happen. And I've seen some of that, you know, in various kids that I've sort of chit-chatted with about the situation, that sometimes they feel sort of a sense of, you know, freedom and able to do things myself that may not have happened pre-COVID. But I think that some of the things I've noticed in terms of, I don't know if this exactly is getting at your question, but of changes in behavior, I have noticed, I would say maybe a little more like social anxiety, and I don't know if it's sort of losing social skills a little bit or just being anxious about all of our what used to be normal social interaction styles. I feel like there's a little bit of, you know, there could be a little bit of like hesitation to engage socially because things are different or you have to do it in a different way, or just kids are kind of out of practice. 5 months is a really long time for little kids, especially to be away from their peers. And sort of if you're just at the beginning of learning how to play socially with peers, be that, you know, preschoolers learning how to play blocks together or middle schoolers learning how to like manage text messaging with each other or interacting in the hallway, if you then don't do that for 5 months, you can kind of lose those burgeoning skills.
Well, Allison Miller, thank you so much for talking to us about this, and we hope you and your family are doing okay.
Great. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.